they told him.
You wouldn't have to do any field duty, but you would have to sing and dance.
Amateurs, people doing things they are not trained to do, this week.
This American Life, Saturday evening at 6. Welcome to the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And coming up in the program, we'll be checking in with Lori James, co-chair of Sullivan County's COVID-19 Task Force. They're bringing together all the agencies involved in administrating, coordinating the vaccination. So we'll get an update on where those efforts stand in Sullivan County. But first, to get things started, Greater Honesdale Partnership, as we've been reporting on over a period of time, Greater Honesdale Partnership is making efforts to turn Honesdale into a premier downtown in the region. They want to create a welcoming atmosphere for locals and visitors, protect the small town feel and historic architectural character and more. And here again to talk about all of this and more, welcome back to the program, Lisa Burns, Executive Director of the Greater Honesdale Partnership. Hello, Lisa. Thank you for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
So can you give people a recap? I can't remember how long it's been since the last time we talked, but you give people a quick reminder of what you were working on, and then we'll get an update on where it stands now.
Sure. So in 2020, we received a local share account grant for about $90,000, and we hired consultants Sturck and Edson to complete a revitalization plan. This is a six-year plan. It's a roadmap of what we can be doing over the next 6 years. We actually finished it. So we have the final plan.
All right.
It's called the Downtown Honesdale Revitalization Project. It's complete and can be found on Greater Honesdale's Facebook page and also under public announcements on the Honesdale Borough website. That's honesdaleborough.com. And again, it's a six-year plan, and the plan lays out some pretty amazing eye candy artistic renderings of what Honesdale can look like if we continue on this path.
Hey, you know, I just went to Facebook to see the post there. And yes, if you go to Greater Honesdale Partnership on Facebook, the post is right there. And now I'm kind of kicking myself because, like, I saw this when this was posted last week. I just didn't read it. So now I'm clicking on the link, and then I'll actually be able to read it, and I'll be able to learn more. Of course, I've got you here to talk about it too, but that's great because I know it was a long process to get to this point.
We had an 11-person design committee that worked this project from beginning to end. They will continue on through phase two and through our facade grant program that we hopefully get this year. We've also, for phase two, we've applied for a local share account grant. Now, those grants they're allocated through gaming tax dollars. So that comes out of Monroe County. So we're going to initiate that phase two as soon as we hear if we get this money. It was put on hold because of COVID last month. So we're hoping to hear this month if we've received anything. And that phase two initiative includes streetscape design services for two priority projects, Main Street sidewalks, crosswalks, streetscape lighting and signage from 4th Street to Park Street for 9 blocks and a length of approximately 3,300 square feet. It's a pretty extensive project. And then we also have a plaza design for a park and Main Street connector. You know, there's a lot of projects going on in the park. There's a lot of festivals and activities. And we really want to just make some kind of connector plaza so that people are drawn more towards Main Street so they can shop and walk on Main Street.
Well, Greater
Honesdale Partnership's main goal is the economic driver. So we need to bring people on Main Street.
This is the image that caught my eye, and this is what I saw last week, and this is why I didn't read any further, because I saw what looks like an artist's interpretation of exactly what you're talking about, because the first thing I noticed was like, oh, it looks like there's going to be a section where there won't be vehicle traffic, where people can walk freely in that whole plaza area. So that's going to be right between Main Street and the park.
Right, and originally we had talked about 9th Street being the location for the plaza. We're batting that around. The design committee is really going back and forth on that. However, it won't shut down the traffic completely. It's going to shut down traffic during events. So you'll have vehicles back and forth through there, you know, monthly. It's just daily. It's just during the events, we're going to shut that down, and we're going to have a plan for that. And the plan is what's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because there'll be chairs, and it'll all be there. It'll be there even when traffic's there, it's going to be there.
Yeah, well, and having a plan's half the battle, and then having a space. It's like then you're more likely to hold those kinds of events knowing that you've got a home for it in a place where you can implement a plan, keep people safe, and make it really festive.
It's really going to be amazing. There's also a parking garage involved in the final plan, and that parking garage would go over on off of Tory Lane, in between Tory Lane and Commercial Street. It's a two-level parking garage. You would come in on the top from Commercial and go in through the bottom from Tory. No connector for cars in between the floors, but that would be 100 parking spots in addition to what we have on Main Street. And that's really going to alleviate a lot of the upstairs rental units. People can't update their apartments and rent them out because they have no parking spaces for them. So that's going to really make an opportunity for the building owners on Main Street to rent out some of those apartments.
So in the past, when you're working on the plan, like you wanted people's input and things like that. Is there anything that you're looking for the wider community or somebody who might be listening who's part of Holmesdale right now? Is there anything that you're wanting people to do in connection with this project at this point?
So we have two things coming up. We're going to launch a capital campaign to raise some money for our match grants. We can't do this without people investing in their town and their community. So we're going to do that in May. We're going to do it through the Wayne County Community Foundation. They'll have a landing page where you can donate right there at a 501c3. We've just submitted yesterday for a DCED facade grant program through the Keystones Community Program. We're hoping that while we're waiting for this LSA grant to come through, we can initiate this facade program and match some grants on Main Street for people who want to paint their building, get new awnings, maybe update their masonry, repoint their building, stuff like that. And that can be up to $5,000. So it's a dollar-to-dollar match. They would have to spend $10,000 to get our $5,000 for them.
Wow. All right. And so that's big news, too.
Yeah, that's big, big news.
So you sound pretty
fresh news.
Yeah, and it's new news, so that's great. So you sound pretty energized about this. You sound like you're feeling good about all of this.
It is a huge project. I have a lot of help. I'm not alone, and the team behind me is really pushing me forward. So I am energized. I can't wait to see what happens next. We were just approved for our Richard Smith blue marker from the Pennsylvania Historical and Museum Commission. That blue marker will get put in front of Dick Smith's house, which is on Church Street. And for those of you who don't know who Dick Smith is, he wrote the wonderful Winter Wonderland song that we sing every single year. So we've also just been approved for that.
Excellent.
Got a lot of good news this week.
Wow, that's great. And, I mean, here we are. It's definitely the springtime. I mean, no, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves in terms of battling the pandemic, but, you know, vaccinations are picking up both on this side of the river and your side of the river. So how are you feeling about 2021?
Oh, I'm really hopeful. Hopeful that we'll be able to do all of our events this year. Hopeful that that people will have their vaccines by June. Very hopeful. It's looking up.
Do you want to mention any of the events that you're hoping will happen, or that might confuse people lest you don't want to tempt fate lest they're not able to come off?
We're going to have them. We just may have to alter them like we did last year. We held every event last year. We really didn't overload the streets with people, like with vendors and things like that.
Right.
We are having our fireworks show in the park for Independence Day on July 2nd. July 17th and 18th is sidewalk sales. October 2nd, I think it's 1st and 2nd, but you could check this on our website, visithonesdalepa.com. We have a ghost tour that's happening 2 weekends in a row in October. We had it last year, and it sold out within a couple of hours. Everybody begged for a second weekend, so we're adding that weekend this year. We have Harvest and Heritage Days on the 8th and the 9th. And then Winter Wonderland is always Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. We'll have a parade with Santa going into town. And then on Shop Small Saturday for Winter Wonderland, we're going to unveil the Dick Smith marker.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. We'll definitely have you on before then to remind people that these things are coming up as the year continues to unspool. And as things continue to be popping in Honesdale, is there anything else you want to let folks know before we get going?
Just that I'm excited to see what happens in 2021.
Absolutely. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us again, and we look forward to having you on the next time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Congratulations. Again, that was Lisa Burns, Executive Director of the Greater Honesdale Partnership. Got a new vision for Honesdale. And it sounds like it's happening. This is Radio Catskill. We're your community radio station, keeping you connected with news and information for Northeast PA. And the Sullivan County Catskills. Okay, coming up, we have our next live guest. We'll be talking about the vaccination efforts in Sullivan County. Last night, we replayed the NAACP vaccine forum, and I want to play you some of the introduction that I put together for that, because it includes clips about vaccines from the representatives on both sides of the river in the WJFF listening area, Representatives Delgado and Cartwright, as well as this update from Owen Walsh yesterday from the River Reporter about the increasing timeline for vaccines in Pennsylvania.
Plans to take advantage of applying for the facility.
Hold on one moment. Made a brief mistake there. Here we go on the local edition. Owen Walsh.
More people can expect to be vaccinated in the next few weeks. The Department of Health announced that starting today, actually, they are opening up vaccine eligibility to certain frontline workers in the 1B category. And as part of their what they're calling a special initiative, it started a few weeks ago when they kind of designated a specific focus of getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to educators and other school staff. Now is kind of the next phase of this special initiative where they're opening up eligibility to law enforcement officers, firefighters, grocery store workers, and food and agricultural workers. Starting April 12th, all residents in the, starting April 5th, all residents in the 1B category, not just the specific ones I laid out, will be eligible. Then starting April 12th, all residents in the 1C category will be eligible. And then April 19th, it'll be eligible to the entire general population.
Okay, again, that was Owen Walsh from the River Reporter. Now, while we're on the Pennsylvania side, let's check in with Congressman Matt Cartwright of Pennsylvania's 8th District. We spoke to him last week, and congresspeople, they like to tout what it is that they've been able to bring to their area and this big stimulus bill passed. Well, when I asked Congressman Cartwright what impact will that money have on his constituents in Northeast PA, the first thing that he talked about was the impact on health care and on the vaccination process in battling the COVID pandemic. Here's Congressman Cartwright, recorded last week.
I just announced $6 million going to the Wayne County Hospital Organization. You know, they've been hit hard. They need money to keep operating and keep their CAT scanners going and keep their all their med techs employed. And I was thrilled to be able to direct that money to Wayne County. That's just one example of doing that. And, you know, getting these shots in the arms. I'm thrilled that, you know, you've noticed it, that this administration under-promises and over-performs. They were talking about 100 million shots in the arms in 100 days. Now they just doubled that, looking at their own performance, 200 million shots in arms in 100 days. We're going to get out of this pandemic. Our economy is going to come back. Opportunities are going to be alive again for people. I'm very optimistic about the end of this year.
Again, that's Congressman Matt Cartwright of Pennsylvania's 8th District. And we also spoke earlier this week with Congressman Antonio Delgado of New York's 19th District. And I asked him as well, especially knowing that we'd be rebroadcasting his NAACP panel tonight, about him getting vaccinated early on to show people that it was safe. And if he had anything to share with constituents about the vaccine process, here's Congressman Delgado.
We have to be able to get vaccinated if you're eligible, if you're able to do so. And we just got big news. As of March 30th, New York residents ages 30 and older are able to get the vaccination. And starting April 6th, if I'm not mistaken, New York residents ages 16 and older will all be eligible for vaccination. That's really big news. And you're right. You know, I thought it was important to make sure that I got the vaccination as a public, as a leader in our community, and as a person of color, knowing that communities of color do have distrust, given some of the history around this issue, from the syphilis experiment, Tuskegee, you know, and even if you look at the numbers now, in terms of, you know, being communities of color are three times more likely to be hospitalized, twice as likely to die. You know, in terms of the numbers regarding COVID. And this is a legacy of racism. This is a legacy of systemic oppression. And so it's incumbent upon us, and particularly leaders like myself, who are aware of this history, to try to do all we can to restore people's trust and faith in the system and know that the science here is working. It's working for everybody. It's working for everybody, for white, for black, for brown. It doesn't matter. And it's incumbent upon us to see that we do all we can to protect ourselves and our communities. And that's the only way we're going to be able to really turn the corner here. And so I certainly, certainly encourage everybody out there, if you're eligible to get the vaccination, please, please get the vaccination. It is safe and it is effective and it is how we can return to some semblance of normalcy in the weeks and months to come.
And again, that's Congressman Antonio Delgado representing New York's 19th District. And that was just a few of the conversations we've been having about vaccines in our listening area just over the last week right here on the local edition. Sullivan County's COVID-19 task force is bringing together all of the agencies involved in administrating and coordinating the vaccination. With volunteers, they are assisting the effort to get all of the residents of Sullivan County vaccinated right now at this time, especially as the vaccines open up more and more eligibility. On the phone with us to talk about this live is co-chair of Sullivan County COVID-19 Task Force, Lori James. Lori, welcome back to WJFF.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So can you expand on what Sullivan County COVID-19 Task Force is and what you've been doing? And then we'll talk about what's to come next.
Sure. So the COVID-19, it's Sullivan County COVID Task Force. I became involved because my co-chair, Bill Liblick, he actually called me up and he said, you know, you get somebody who's busy and you get them busier because that's, you know, that's how you get things done. And he asked if I would co-chair with him this committee because there was a need in Sullivan County to have three things happen. One, advocacy for the vaccines. And what I mean by that is to ensure that we were receiving vaccines in Sullivan County for our Sullivan County residents. So how do we do that at a grassroots level? You know, we've been very, very blessed in having, I just heard on, you know, on air, Congressman Delgado. I've heard Assemblywoman Gunther. And we also have Senator Mike Martucci, who have been working with us to ensure that we're doing our best to get the vaccines here. But sometimes they need a little help as well. And being able to mobilize that grassroots effort in that advocacy. And we're starting to see some turnaround in that and an ability to receive some pop-ups that'll be coming up and more vaccines actually coming into our hospitals, into our doctor's offices, and certainly into our pharmacies. So that would be the like one of what Bill's mission was when he called me. On the second hand of the mission is to ensure that we are developing lines of communication in being able to have each agency talking to the next. What was happening was, you know, vaccines were happening in one location and one what we call pods, the point of distribution, and they were happening there. And at the end of the day, if there were vaccines left over, where were those vaccines going? What were we doing with those vaccines? Hustling around and trying to get people where there were other people in another location who could potentially be using them, or who's getting the J&J and who's getting the Moderna and who's getting Pfizer. And we have to be very conscious of who's getting Pfizer, especially now, because on April 6th, when we do open up to 16 and above, 16 and 17 year olds can only get the Pfizer vaccine. It is only approved for, the only vaccine that's approved for 16 and 17 year olds currently. It's really important that we know where are those vaccines, where are they going, who's getting what, and how is that flowing. And then the third thing was a double component. One is to ensure that people understand that this task force exists, to educate them on how do we help them get their vaccines. As I lovingly say, and you know, Bill laughs at me when I say it, is making sure that everyone gets their Fauci ouchie. So we want to make sure that everybody has access to and knows how to get scheduled for, whether they be somebody who has transportation to or needs transportation to, or maybe they're homebound, whatever the case may be. How do we get that information out there, and how do we help them register and make sure that we're getting those Fauci ouchies in those arms? And the second thing is to develop enough of a volunteer pool to also be able to not only assist us with that in getting the vaccines into arms, but also going into communities. One of our biggest problems is vaccine hesitancy. And vaccine hesitancy comes from a number of different reasons. There are people who are just anti-vaxxers. That's who they are. But there's a lot of people, and the majority of the vaccine hesitancy that we're seeing stems from the fact of people who are not sure of the vaccines. There's this understanding in their minds that, well, this was developed in 8 months. That's incorrect information. This is a vaccine that has been in the works for over 20 years. And therefore, that 20-year ratio, the last end of it, is what got sped up in that warp speed concept. So this is not a vaccine that has just been developed in 8 months. And I had a doctor tell me, as you know, I'm a cancer survivor, and I spoke obviously to my regular doctors, you know, my general practitioners, but also my oncologists. And they shared with me in no uncertain terms, when you put everybody into something full-heartedly, and everything went toward this. And we know, you know, that research in cancer and research in heart disease and things of that nature took a back seat this year, because people were putting all of their scientific energies into finding and making sure this vaccine was safe for everybody. So the vaccine is safe. They would not have allowed it to get the emergency approval that it received without it being safe. I, as I said, I'm a cancer survivor. People who know me know that, you know, I lovingly love to say about, you know, my life, I take a licking and I keep on ticking. But I was very hesitant myself in, you know, what would that do to me? I already have immune system issues because of cancer treatments. What would that mean? And I did my research, and, you know, we all ran out and bought Lysol. at the very beginning of this pandemic, we bought the Lysol wipes, we bought the Lysol spray. You take a look, says very clearly on there that it was able to fight the COVID-19 virus. And why did they know that? Because the research had already been done from the chemical component of it. So it was just that one end component that needed to take place. So these vaccines are safe. Of course, I'm not a doctor. Everybody has to go and speak to their doctor. There are reasons why some people may not be able to get the vaccine. So if you have a medical issue, for example, my sister is unable to take the vaccine. She has a condition called von Willebrand's disease. She's a female hemophiliac. And therefore, because she's got the blood disorder, she's unable to take the vaccine. So what we all need to do to keep my sister safe and so many people out there who may have reasons why they can't take the vaccine is we have to make sure that we're taking it for them, because it is the only way we're getting back to normal.
And I'm not a doctor either, so I'll phrase what I'm about to say very carefully. But one of the things that really reassured me, apart from the fact that I really took a look at what bodies were evaluating the vaccine and the process it did go through, but learning that the mRNA vaccines, this is a new type of vaccine technology, and it was already being developed, and that's part of what gave these companies a leg up in developing these vaccines, is just having a whole new way to approach it that they had already been working on.
This is a vaccine 20 years in the making.
Yep.
And again, it's just specific to the COVID-19, that aspect of it, and our ability to make sure that the rollout was safe for human beings. That was the 8-month process. But the concept of the vaccines take usually 20 years for them to fully come to fruition. And they do speed up vaccines, in process when there are major health issues based around that scenario of whatever that disease might be that they're trying to fight. In this case, the energy went right into that, and this is a safe vaccine. And the hesitancy is real. I don't take that away from anybody. I've been volunteering by the way, I've gotten both of my shots, just so that I specify that. I've gotten both of my shots of Moderna. And again, with all my autoimmune situations, because some of the vaccine hesitancy is I'm scared of the side effects. So let me tell you my side effects. After the first shot, I had soreness in my arm, had a little bit of difficulty the second day raising it over my arm. Over my head. So when I went to put on my shirt, I had I knew that I got my Fauci that day. So that was what I had, some fatigue. After the second shot, my arm was not as sore as it was the first time. I did have a slight headache the evening of the shot. It was very dull. I didn't take anything for it, and it was gone in about an hour and a half. And then the next day, I had fatigue. No different than I would get if I got a flu shot.
Right.
Now, that's not to say there aren't people who aren't getting more severe symptoms. They are. Everyone's different. Just like we talked about, everyone's different with regard to you did the research, et cetera, as to where we are with the vaccines, and your decision to take. Your reaction is going to be different than mine because our DNA is different. And we're all going to be different. Our ages are different. Our genders are different. So everything about us is different. And then you toss in what are our underlying circumstances. But no two people are exactly the same. And that's true of any vaccine.
And I'm preparing myself for if I get the second shot, knowing that after that second shot, it may not kick my butt. It may kick my butt, but the reality is I could use a good butt kicking sometimes. So I'm not too scared of it.
Some of us use a good butt kicking, but the reality is it's better than COVID because we do not know the long term effects of COVID yet.
Lori,
we do not know. We have a number of long haulers.
We're going to have to go in just 30 seconds. I wanted to ask you, do you need volunteers?
We always need volunteers. If anybody would like to volunteer, all they have to do is reach out to us. Or if they need help getting a vaccine or want to know a place that there's a vaccine or have questions, all they do is reach out to Sullivan COVID. Sullivan COVID SullivanCovidTaskForce@gmail.com.
Okay, give that one more time in case people are interested in volunteering. Yeah.
SullivanCovidTaskForce@gmail.com. All one word, SullivanCovidTaskForce@gmail.com.
All right, we've been talking to Lori James, co-chair of Sullivan County COVID-19 Task Force. Just got a lot of information, got a good shot of information all at once there. Lori, thank you so much.
Glad to be on, and thank you so much for helping us get the word out there.
That's great. This is Radio Catskill. That's it for the local edition. Join us again tomorrow.